You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, during the shooting at Oshkosh High School last week, one student led classmates to safety by letting them into her mosque. We'll get her firsthand account. First, let's go back to President Trump's impeachment inquiry hearings in the House Intelligence Committee last month. We'll talk about the actual impeachment process later today. But some observers have pointed out that the testimony of Trump's ambassador to the European Union may highlight a problem that began many administrations ago: unqualified diplomats. Here's Ambassador Gordon Sondland.
As ambassador, I've had hundreds of meetings and calls with individuals, but I'm not a note taker or a memo writer. Never have been. My job requires that I speak with heads of state, senior government officials, members of the cabinet, the president, almost each and every day. Talking with foreign leaders might be memorable to some people, but this is my job. I do it all the time.
Sondland is a wealthy hotel owner on the West Coast who donated $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee. Our guest says this kind of pay-to-play arrangement is nothing new, although President Trump may have taken it to a new level. Ryan Scoville is an associate professor at Marquette University Law School. He specializes in international and U.S. foreign relations law. He researched the credentials of U.S. ambassadors earlier this year in a paper for the Duke Law Journal. Ryan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, Gordon Sondland is just one recent example, but there's a long history of non-diplomatic diplomats getting these ambassadorial posts. But you tackled this. You tried to figure out the numbers. What did you try to figure out in your research here?
Yeah, so I looked at a few things. First, I tried to examine the commonality of these sorts of ambassadors over the course of U.S. history. And in that regard, I found that political appointees have been common ever since the 19th century. And they, in fact, were the majority up through the Franklin Roosevelt administration. They only really dropped to the level that we see today, which is approximately 30% of all ambassadorships with the Truman administration. So this has been a longstanding feature of U.S. Diplomacy. The second thing I found was that although political appointees have been basically, they've had the same commonality over the last several decades since Truman. The qualifications of these individuals have gradually eroded. So the typical appointee under President Reagan, for example, even if we're looking exclusively at political appointees, is not the same as the average political appointee under Trump. If we were to look at language abilities, for example, the average political appointee under Trump is inferior to the average political appointee under Reagan. And the same is true if we look at regional experience, prior experience in the receiving state to which they're sent, and also prior experience in foreign policy and organizational leadership. So today's political appointee is not the same as the political appointee of decades past.
And
the third...
Go ahead.
Well, the third finding was that these political appointees whose credentials have been eroding are donating much larger sums of money to nominating presidents. Again, comparing Trump and Reagan, even after adjusting for inflation, there's been a nearly 1,400% increase in the average size of the campaign contributions over the course of the last several decades.
Is it necessarily true that somebody coming in from outside of the diplomatic system as a donor, a business person, whatever, is going to do a worse job than somebody who came up through the U.S. Foreign Service?
No, I don't think it's necessarily the case. And in fact, if you look at modern U.S. diplomatic history, there are a number of examples of individuals who have come from outside the Foreign Service who nevertheless excelled in the office of ambassador. That said, I think it's quite plausible and even likely that individuals who lack the typical credentials will tend to be inferior in terms of performance to those who, served their entire careers in diplomacy.
Now, since the Reagan era, have we seen examples of, fairly big money donors with low qualifications as a bipartisan event? Either party's president might do something like this.
Yeah, it's been common regardless of what type of presidential administration we're talking about. These sorts of nominees were common under Obama. They were common under Reagan. They were common under Clinton. And they're certainly common under Trump today. One thing that is a little bit different under Trump, however, is that although the percentage of political appointees was roughly 30% of all ambassadors from Truman all the way through Obama, under Trump, these sorts of ambassadors had become a little bit more common. Rather than 30%, political appointees now make up a little over 40%. So there's been a 10 to 15% increase in the commonality of these sorts of ambassadors just in the first several years of the Trump administration. Whether that will hold true throughout the course of his administration is unclear, but at the moment that it seems to be the case that the president has a somewhat stronger preference for this sort of appointee.
Does it matter where these ambassadors are doing their jobs? Is it okay maybe if the less qualified ones get what we might view as a cushy appointment in a non-controversial place versus somebody where we need some really good ambassadoring going on?
Yeah, I think there's a good case to be made that it does matter where they get sent. And it's certainly true that sometimes these sorts of appointees are sent to countries that the United States does not have particularly important bilateral relationships with. So sometimes you'll see political appointees get sent to the Bahamas or Fiji. Clearly, the geopolitical stakes are not terribly high in those particular contexts. At the same time, we also send political appointees to Japan, France, Italy, and under Trump, even countries in the Middle East like the United Arab Emirates. So it's certainly the case that our bilateral relationships with those countries are quite significant, whether we're looking at military issues or economic ties or otherwise. So I don't think that this is a practice that is limited exclusively to bilateral relationships that are sort of trivial or not as significant as some of the others.
And for people who don't follow foreign service and foreign relations that closely, you know, we see a president on the TV screen, we see the Secretary of State maybe. How important is the ambassador?
There's a good case to be made that ambassadors remain important. I think there have been a number of authors who have made the argument that ambassadors' importance has diminished in recent decades, in part because the advent of various communications technologies, transportation technologies have made it easier for higher ranking officials in Washington to manage relationships with foreign governments, easier than it used to be anyway. Some have also made the argument that ambassadors are less important than they used to be, given the increasingly specialized and technical nature of foreign relations. The argument here is that given the expertise that is often required, ambassadors who are diplomatic generalists often are not as well positioned to contribute. But all that said, it's certainly the case that ambassadors, as a matter of law, retain substantial and even increasing authority in a number of ways. So for example, the ambassador remains the chief administrator, manager, supervisor of all of the embassy staff. In many cases, these staff number in the hundreds. And certainly it's hard to make the argument that it doesn't matter who is supervising and directing all these individuals. Ambassadors play a very important managerial role. And, you know, they also retain important diplomatic functions that they've always had. So ambassadors today still participate in treaty negotiations. They still engage in the promotion of U.S. goods and services to foreign governments. They still attend diplomatic conferences. They still promote democracy and engage in various other efforts to advance U.S. national interests. So I think that, you know, ambassadors are certainly not the single most important officials in U.S. foreign policy. Certainly the president and the secretary of state are more important. Their powers and their duties are more serious. But at the same time, ambassadors play a very important role in making sure that U.S. foreign relations are carried out in an effective manner.
Talking to Ryan Scoville from Marquette University Law School about U.S. ambassadors, how many of them are political appointees, often political donors, and the impact that has on America's foreign policy. Ryan, before we get to some of the solutions and fixes you offer in your piece that we're talking about, is this common? Do other countries do it this way?
So it's not particularly common among advanced democracies. So if you look at Japan, for example, or a number of countries in Western Europe, the standard practice there is to rely exclusively on professional diplomats to serve as ambassadors. On the other hand, there are a number of developing countries that have practices similar to that of the United States, practices whereby they don't rely exclusively on merit or exclusively on professional diplomats to serve as ambassadors. So it's sort of a mixed bag. What the United States does is not totally unprecedented, but it's sort of abnormal for advanced democracies.
And people might assume, Ryan, hey, this is a job that the president gets to appoint, so president gets to do this and there's not much we can do about it. You say in your piece that's not necessarily so.
Yeah, I think there are a number of things that Congress could do. So one is, I think the most straightforward solution would be for the Senate simply to be more exacting in its review of ambassadorial nominees, and for the Senate to essentially turn down nominees whose qualifications seem unlikely to foreshadow an effective time in office. There's been a longstanding tradition of the Senate giving extreme deference to the president on these sorts of nominations. I think the historical average is that the Senate only turns down roughly 3% of ambassadorial nominations. If the Senate really wanted to improve matters, it could certainly scrutinize more carefully and reject a higher percentage. So that's the most straightforward solution. Somewhat more complicated solutions also exist, however. So, for example, if Congress wanted to, I think there's a good case to be made that they could pass a statute that regulates the qualifications of nominees such that the president lacks authority to make a nomination if an individual, for example, has never had has no prior experience in foreign policy or has made campaign donations in excess of a certain sum. Some would, I think, contest the constitutionality of that sort of legislation, but this is a debated issue. And in my view, it's one that leaves more room for Congress to intervene than some would otherwise suggest. On top of that, there are also statutory transparency measures. So, for example, at the moment, it's a little bit difficult for members of the public to figure out precisely how much nominees have donated to the presidents who nominate them. Congress could improve transparency in that regard by mandating aggregate information on the dollar values of the campaign contributions that come from nominees and then publish that information, for example, on the State Department's website. Congress could also mandate more clear information about qualifications so that members of the media and members of the public could quickly look up the qualifications of individuals and compare those qualifications to the amount of money that has been donated, and in turn draw inferences about whether or not money is playing an undue role in this appointments process.
In our few moments, where I wanted to ask, a lot of people in Congress might be happy to do this for a president from the opposite party, but not their own party. Are you hopeful in just 30 seconds or so that any of these solutions might actually be taken seriously in Congress?
Well, I'm not totally lacking in hope, but I'm not particularly optimistic. There's been discussions about reform in this area for a long time, ever since at least Watergate, but Congress hasn't really done anything. I think part of the reason is that members of Congress themselves receive substantial campaign contributions from these very same nominees. So I'm not too optimistic, unfortunately.
Ryan, thanks a lot for sharing your research with us.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
That's Ryan Scoville, associate professor at Marquette University Law School. He specializes in international and U.S. foreign relations law. We talked to him about his research into why U.S. ambassadors are often unqualified or underqualified, why many of them, often about 30% in recent years, maybe an uptick in the last couple of years, are not coming out of the Foreign Service, but are often political donors to the president and or the president's party. He published a paper in the Duke Law Journal on this topic.